Hello and welcome to a Tuesday episode of the State of the Nova Nation. I'm Eugene Rippe. He's Chris Stanzial. Chris, man, this weekend was a reminder that not only one can you not win them all, but when you ride that buzz of a championship high, you have that good feeling and it carries over until the next year. And then it goes through non-con play, Big East tournament, and then you get to the big dance, you get to the NCAA tournament. And then when you finally get that loss or you finally get hit with that reality that, wow, not everyone gets to enjoy this feeling and totally forgot how bad the losing side feels. Not fun.
No, it's not fun at all. I will say that compared from the 16 to 17 transition from championship to round of 32 loss, this isn't at half as bad, mainly because 17's team was the one seed and ended up losing to 8 seed Wisconsin. This one, it was kind of predetermined about, I don't know, early in the second half, if you really thought Villanova would climb back into it like myself. You just knew the way they were shooting. It was a reminder of how good Villanova's teams were in the past, where Villanova would do this to the likes of Kansas and Oklahoma. I mean, a lot of people were joking about that, saying this is exactly how it feels like. Even Jay Wright in his press conference said, yeah, it entered my mind. This is exactly what we did to Kansas last year. So when you get a performance like that, you kind of accept it and you're like, all right, if this is how you're going to go out, you might as well just tip your cap because of the way they played. And at that point, you're just rooting on the seniors at that point to just hopefully just get something going to, you know, make them go out on a little bit of a higher note. And it's sad that they lost, but I feel even more sad for Pascal and Booth for the way they went out. It was going to happen regardless, however they lost. But to go out like that, it's probably a little more upsetting.
Yeah, as fans, you know, the close games where it comes down to the closing seconds and then you just get that heartbreaking dagger, that feeling is not fun. Getting blown out is never fun either, but there's a point in the game where you kind of accept the fact that it's a loss. But for a player, it's rough all around, especially when you look at, you know, two heroes in Phil Booth and Eric Pascal, to what they meant to the 2016 and 2018 runs. Man, it was just, you felt really sad for them. And then you go to the post-game conference and then you could tell that they were crying, or they were definitely emotional about it. And then Eric Pascal crying on the podium. It was a tough, heavy scene. March sadness is real. We were fortunate that we didn't get to experience it for as long as we did. But man, I almost forgot how, like, this feeling is just no fun. Like, I turned on basketball the next day, Sunday, and I just had a hard time watching it, and I turned it off. And the only time I turned it back on again was when I heard UCF almost beat Duke. So I was like, okay, let me check it, see how that game's going to end. And then once that was over, I was like, I have no inclination to watch any more basketball for at least a while, at least until further notice.
Yeah, I feel like that way with every sport. Like, once my team's eliminated, like, especially in the playoffs, I do not want to watch the rest of the playoffs because I feel that my team should be there and kind of feel robbed of that. When those guys were speaking at the podium with Pascal and Booth, that was just awful. Heart-wrenching, really. You see Eric crying. You really felt legitimately bad for him. He loved playing for this program, as you saw. He even said it in the press conference. It was pretty well known. And Phil, too, like, he was a lot more private about it. He wasn't showing it on his face. You could tell he was very upset. His words said he was upset, but wasn't crying, wasn't, you know, very demonstrative about it. But you could tell that man probably felt very upset that this whole run's over. Five-year run, basically, for both of them with their college basketball careers. Obviously, Pascal had the transfer over, but still, for them to go out like that, and then you, as a fan, you just feel horrible for them. And for us too, both of us. Phil especially, Eric didn't play when we were there. He was on the team. But this was our last connection to the Villanova basketball from when we were there. Phil Booth was the last player remaining from that 2016 team to have actually played minutes. So that's it for us. Like, we have no more connections to that. Everyone else who comes in or has plays another minute for Villanova basketball will have not been at school when we were there. So for us, it was a little more emotional as well.
And Jay was definitely emotional about that too. I asked him a little bit about what his message was to those seniors, Tim Delaney included, to those three guys that were there for him during his first national championship run and moving forward. And you could tell, man, the locker room was just a heavy sense of sadness, that realization that the season's over. And to me personally, you know, they're the coaches that can hound you. You got the tough coaches like Jim Boeheim or Huggy Bear who will just wreck you over a bad question. But to me, honestly, the hardest thing is trying to talk to someone after their season has just come to an end, high school included, high school and college included. Just seeing the sadness on the player's face. For some of them, you know, their career's over. For Phil Booth and Eric Pascal, I definitely envision bright futures for them. But for the players who are like, wow, this is really it, it's not a fun feeling. And you even saw some of the sophomores and some of the young guys who will be back next year. They definitely felt that feeling. And I hope they hang on to it because I hope that inspires them during the offseason. Then they'll come back next year even stronger because of it. But let's just look at this weekend as a whole. So first off, on Thursday night after we were on the air, we had that game against the St. Mary's Gales. And if there's one thing that was nice about it is that we got a little revenge over that 2010 loss that had been suffered when Nova was a 2 seed and then they got upset in the second round back in the 2010 NCAA tournament. Nova ended up beating the St. Mary's Gales 61-57, and this was just a big boy game. I thought this was another one of those grinded out games. Felt a lot like the Big East tournament games that we had seen last week, where it was just close, back and forth, no real breathing room for either team. Villanova and St. Mary's were just neck and neck until that nice 7-0 spurt that Nova got to get a little separation, and then it forced the St. Mary's timeout. And the big driving force for that, man, that was Jermaine Samuels with a block on one end that led to a three-pointer by Bay. Then he topped it off with a fast break dunk before St. Mary's called time. You had Phil Booth. He dropped 20 in that game. Eric Pascal with 14. Jermaine Samuels finished with 12 points and 7 rebounds. And then on the St. Mary's side, you had Malik Fitz and Jordan Ford lead the way for the Gales with 13 points apiece. Chris, what stood out to you about this game?
Well, I did not realize how slow St. Mary's played. My God. I know Brendan was on the show last Tuesday, I believe it was, and told us, you know, St. Mary's plays slow and whatever. And if you look at the KenPom stats, tempo-wise, they're sort of in the same vicinity as Villanova. But my God, St. Mary's is more like Virginia in that sense. They really play out that shot clock. I did not realize it at the time. It made for a very tough, watchable game. But on the Villanova end, I got to say, the defense was on point that night. It seemed like every dribble drive by St. Mary's, especially Ford, was contested. Everyone seemed to be on their game, especially Gillespie on the defensive end. He had a lot of nice stops at the top of the key, just guarding Ford. Phil Booth played great defensively. Everybody played great defensively. I loved the defense that game. And, you know, Hunter, you know, he went 3 of 5 from the field, whatever, but I really didn't think he was that much of a factor. Fitz had his own. I mean, he was pretty good throughout the game, but Ford was the guy we were mainly concerned about. He did not all that much. He played all 40 minutes and he went 1 of 7 from 3-point range. Honestly, I'll take that any day, especially when their leading scorer really can't hit much from the field. I would take it. The defense was on point, and I thought Jermaine Samuels had a great game. Big game, Jermaine. Like you said, with that, the whole transition thing from the block going down, getting an offensive rebound, kicking it out the Bay, and then finishing it up with a dunk on the next possession or several possessions after. I don't remember exactly. Remember, that was a cool sequence there. And yeah, Phil Booth matching his 20-point performance like he did in the national championship game in 2016, as we all fondly remember. And I thought Eric played a fine game offensively. I know the stats don't really line up with it, and he missed those key free throws at the end, but I thought he did all right. I think he was able to adjust his offensive game in the second half, able to drive a lot more, and as a result, he finished with 14 points. At first, the defense was a little weird. It seemed like a lot of people were running around with the chicken out their head, but I think once halftime rolled around, the defense really locked down, and as a result, they held St. Mary's to 57. And yes, a lot of that was a result of the tempo St. Mary's played at, but I love the defense as well. I thought they stood tall.
Yeah, the defense was definitely something that stood out, you know, especially with the size of St. Mary's and the talent, the shiftiness of Ford. I didn't even know that guy. He's a little mosquito. He can get into those tight spaces. He can fool you. He was very crafty. He got a bunch of different Nova players to bite on the pump fake. But once that happened, thankfully, Nova was there for the help. And they just really shut him down or never let him really take over the game. The tempo, as you said, yeah. They say slow. That was more than slow. That was like you could read it, and it was something that, you know, you look at the videos and you look at all the analysts and you look at all the stats and the reports, and it's like, oh, okay, they play slow. But yeah, no, that was like, and you had to see it to believe how slow they go. They are okay with driving it down to like the last couple of ticks of the shot clock, and then they'll somehow work a comfortable shot from that. I don't know how. the defense was especially big. Defense helped start that 7-0 run that gave Nova the separation it needed to eventually pull away, take down St. Mary's. Chris, was your high school self happy about that?
Very much so. It really was. And to beat them in a relatively close game, it wasn't a buzzer beater or anything by that stretch, but it was a relatively close game, so you're able to make it a little bit more dramatic and rip out their hearts just a little bit more. So yeah, I was pretty happy with it.
It was definitely one of those attitude games, one of those grit, bring your lunch pail to work day. And I was very happy with the defense. I was very happy with the way that no one was scared to fight with them down low, bang down with the size, get in the face of forward or contest everything, work hard on every single possession. Yeah, like you said, the first half, the defense was definitely a little off, but I had confidence. And it was one of those things where, like, it seems like at halftime, they're definitely going to rework or tinker around a little bit with the defensive game plan and they get everything straightened out. And then once the second half came, it was like, woo, night and day. A lot more organized defensively. And then once everything just started slowly turning Nova's way, you knew that they were just going to run away with it. But I got to give it to St. Mary's. They really fought till the very end. Very, 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 very resilient. Glad we were able to avenge that 2010 loss. Glad that we were able to avoid the upset, because you never want to be on the losing side of the first round upset. A nice feel-good Thursday night win going into the weekend.
Yeah, it was. I will say that the end of that game was a little trepidatious, especially with the inbounds. Seemed to be reverting back to the early 2010s Villanova teams with those inbounds plays, but they were able to fight through it, despite the mistakes at the end with the inbounds and the missed free throws. They still were able to pull it out.
The inbounds plays, though, I think that's just tradition. I think that's just something we've accepted. I don't know how long or whatever it's just going to take to draw up a simple inbounds, but at the last 3 minutes of the game, all the inbounds passes were just awful. Edge of your seat. Yeah, like, makes no sense. Like, oh, we got this big man on Phil. Let's try to lob it over him. No.
No, guys. Like, come on. No one could free themselves up. It is a tradition. It does feel like every year this is a problem, but I feel like it kind of subsided when we were in school and maybe a year or two after. I remember last year we had that whole thing against Seton Hall when Dante couldn't inbound the ball. But other than that, I think there really wasn't like a big incident where that happened. I thought they were pretty good. But when I was in high school and watching those teams, especially the Scotty Reynolds teams, I felt like they always had problems inbounding. And it seemed like they went back to that on Thursday night. But yeah, maybe work on that over the offseason. Or maybe it won't change. Who knows?
I think also the last 5-6 years, the talent was so high. So very easy to overlook some problems when you're very good at everything else.
Very true.
So after Villanova beat St. Mary's, move on to the second round. Round of 32. No matter how good or bad, you know that this round just makes you feel a little uneasy. Even when they won the national championships, and you knew they were going to blow them out, and you knew they were going to massacre the likes of Iowa or Alabama, you just felt uneasy. Because as Villanova fans, that's what happens when the second round comes. I'll be honest, I felt more confident this year about the second round than maybe the last couple. And when I stayed over after the Villanova St. Mary's game to watch Purdue play Old Dominion, and I'm sitting there watching this, and I'm just like, this team is not that impressive. They're so inefficient. They're shooting 30% from deep. They can't hit anything. It seems like they force everything. As a team that night, they shot only 37% overall, 30% from deep, which isn't stellar, but it's more than enough to beat Old Dominion. And I'm sitting there and I'm looking at Carson Edwards and I'm like, this guy's listed as 6'1". I'm triple taking, double taking. And I'm like, there's no way this guy's taller than 5'10". And I'm just like, okay. So I was confident going into this weekend that Nova would be pretty good or be in good shape for the second round. But then after watching the Purdue Old Dominion game, I was like, oh man, it's going to be a good game, but I feel like Nova should pull this one out. Chris, how wrong I was. I guess how wrong we were, because we thought that they were going to get to the Sweet 16. But how did it look at home? I don't know. Did you watch any pregame? What were the analysts saying? Because I was there live, so we didn't get access to that. But I'm curious as to what the predictions were going into this game.
Oh, don't worry. Outside of Seth Davis and the Loyola Chicago coach, whose name escapes me at the moment, everyone else seemed to be very anti-Purdue, especially Brandon Haywood. He was very anti-Purdue in the sense that, he just didn't believe in Carson Edwards for whatever reason at the time. And I'm like, thanks, dude. Thanks for jinxing it. I knew at that moment it was game over. Why even play the game? I knew Edwards was going to go off. Didn't think it was going to be to this extent, but I knew Edwards would hit some threes. He would definitely have a better shooting percentage than he did against Old Dominion. He would definitely have a better shooting percentage than he did throughout the whole year. I knew Klein was going to hit some threes at that point. I knew Harms was going to just dunk all over us no matter what happened, no matter who was guarding him. And I was like, thanks, dude. This is all your fault. You officially jinxed it. He solely based his prediction on one player being inefficient and said, yeah, Villanova's going to win because of that and the senior leadership. I was like, thanks, dude. Really appreciate it. Candace Parker also picked Villanova as well. I don't really remember her reasoning, but Brandon Haywood stood out in my mind because I knew once he said it, Purdue was not going to miss.
Yeah, I revisited Catherine's preview of Purdue and then kind of did a little scouting of my own just to kind of prep for that game. And then also midway through the Murray State, Florida State game, once that game was well decided, I started looking into Purdue way more also. I was ready to convince myself that Nova was going to win this game. And unfortunately, that's not how it went down. And that's not how it went down from the get-go. It was pretty much a wire-to-wire victory for Purdue. And you had Carson Edwards, the man who was shooting 27% overall on the floor and 24.4% from three-point range over the last four games leading into Saturday night. There has been this whole narrative about, oh, he's a volume scorer, very inefficient, as Brendan Haywood said. And then as various people who, when it came to, you know, who you got, Villanova, Purdue, most people seem to lean towards that as a reasoning that Carson Edwards is slightly overrated, volume scorer, wildly inefficient, this and that. Nova should be able to find a way to win. Harms is going to be a problem. Well, Matt Harms was definitely a big problem, but Carson Edwards was an even bigger problem. That guy started out 5 of 8 from long range. He wasn't missing. And then once he was hot, that seemed to be infectious because then you had other guys like Ryan Klein start to cash in, a couple of different shooters off the bench, and then Matt Harms throwing it down low, and Nova just looked disorganized on defense. It was really tough. And then all of a sudden, you see Purdue's taking a nice, healthy 20-point lead into the break. And it was like, what is happening right now?
Yeah, I don't think Jay even knew what was happening right then. I don't think anybody on Villanova knew what was happening. It was weird. Like, I felt like at first, the defense was okay. I felt that Purdue was just hitting shots, but then it just got out of hand. There were guys wide open, lots of broken plays on offensive rebounds. I mean, especially the offensive rebounding. Purdue had 12. Villanova had 9, but I feel like a lot of that came in garbage time, at least to shrink the differential. Purdue was out-rebounding Villanova significantly throughout the night. Total final rebounds was 42-24 in favor of Purdue. But Purdue got a lot of offensive rebounds early, was able to kick it out, and they hit some threes from it. Also in transition, it seemed like Villanova had no business covering anybody in transition, especially the guy who was 9-16 from three on the night. They did not feel like covering anyone in transition. They didn't feel like covering three-point line. And if the ball got inside, Harms was, I can't even remember how many times he was wide open. And from whatever reason it was, it felt like a lot of it had to do with the switching up at the top of the key. And I think Purdue was just able to exploit the bad switches and the inexperience of Villanova, I guess. But you would think by then they would kind of know the switching system. But Harms seemed to be wide open underneath all the time. Edwards seemed to be always have a wide open shot. Granted, they were deep shots, but he was open. Klein seemed to be open on the wing in transition, and it just fell apart from there. And Purdue wasn't missing. Like I said earlier, this is exactly how Kansas and Oklahoma probably felt when they played Villanova in the Final Four in two of the past 3 years.
Definitely. That is a good point. Yeah, I think you are right in that. Yes, in the beginning, shots were contested and they were just dropping. And it was like, okay, they got to cool down eventually. And unfortunately, that didn't happen. Purdue just kept on slinging from deep. They shot over 50% overall, over 50% from deep. They drained 16 threes. It was tough. It was really hard. You know, Nova offensively was just struggling. The shot selection wasn't too great. Seemed like Purdue had a great game plan for making Phil Booth and Eric Pascal very uncomfortable, having them to force the ball out to the other guys. If they were going to get beat, it was going to be by Colin Gillespie, Jermaine Samuels, Sadiq Bey. They weren't going to let themselves get beaten by Villanova seniors, and just the start was bad, and then Purdue just never stopped from there. Once they took that 43-24 lead going into half, they came out of the break with a 13-0 run, and right then and there, you knew that was the death sentence. That was the nail in the coffin, and it was so tough because Purdue pushed the lead to as high as 35, and you were sitting there, and you were thinking, man, I hate to see Phil Booth and Eric Pascal go out like this. It was just tough. You know, fans were leaving early. to the Nova fans that stayed. They were able to give Booth and Pascal standing O's, which was nice. It was cool to get them at least, you know, it was a nice little moment. Even though the game was rough, it was cool that those fans were able to stay around and give them props, give them credit, celebrate them for the last 5 years, celebrate the ends of their careers at Villanova. Purdue just never stopped, and unfortunately, Nova continued to just go cold from the floor. They shot only 34.5% for the entire game, and then less than 29% from deep. The shots just never turned around, and then once that lead was too great, you knew that it was hard to climb back. The rebounding was rough, the defense was rough, the shooting was rough, but ultimately, you just got to tip your hat to Purdue. Great execution by them. Matt Harms is definitely for real. Carson Edwards, he really shut down all those critics and all the people who doubted him, including myself, with a career-high 42-point game, 9 of 16 from deep, as he said. They were just locked in. They had Villanova's number, and it just seemed like Nova wasn't ready.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. And Jay even said it himself in his presser. They weren't ready. They didn't prepare well enough for this game. He blamed it on himself and the coaching staff, which, I mean, you know, props to him for at least admitting it. I mean, he would never throw his players under the bus, obviously, but at least props to him for admitting that, you know, maybe they weren't ready for this. I think you made a good point with the offense, and especially the Purdue defense. Phil Booth and Eric Pascal looked very uncomfortable all night. Very, very uncomfortable all night. And as a result, Villanova's offense obviously would suffer. I felt like Villanova was generating some shots early on, open shots. They just weren't hitting them. And then they kind of panicked. And as a result, Phil started to press a little bit more. Eric started taking some long-range twos, which sort of became a thing in this tournament for whatever reason. I'm not sure why. And as a result, the offense suffered. The shot selection was poor. And Villanova went on one of its patented cold spells, as we've been used to this year, which with the 5:08 mark in the first half, Phil Booth hit a basket to cut the Purdue lead to 10. They scored two more points until the 14:23 mark in the second half. That's a long, long drought with only putting up one other basket. That's horrific. You're going to lose to any team in the country if you play like that. So credit to Purdue's defense for sure for definitely making everybody look bad. And we can sit here and criticize the Villanova defense and allowing all those threes and whatever. But the offense did itself no favors either, at least not until the end when it started, became garbage time and things freed up a bit and the guys on the bench. But yeah, that it was just brutal from the get-go.
There were some positives, though. I thought Jermaine Samuels had a pretty solid game. No turnovers. Hit a few long-range shots. Phil Booth also hit his 1,500th career point. Nice little milestone for him. But overall, it was tough. It was a tough loss. The final score was 87-61. Eric Pascal finished with 19 points. Phil Booth added 15 points. Jermaine Samuels had 11 points. And then on the Purdue side, aside from Carson Edwards, who dropped 42, you had Matt Harms. He finished with 18 points and 9 boards. He was 8 of 12 on the floor. And then Ryan Klein was 4 of 8 from deep, and he finished with 12 points and 4 assists. Chris, it's the end of the season, the end of the year. Now it's time to reflect. We can reflect on this whole season. How do you view this? There were people who had their reservations, had their thoughts already about how they would look at this year, but now that all the games have been played, you've had a couple of days to digest, think it over. How do you look at this season as a whole?
Well, I kind of have a positive and a negative spin on it. I don't know which one you want me to go with first, but I'll go with the negative first because I'd like to finish off with a positive. So my negative spin is that, was this really all worth it? And I mean that in the sense of the development of the entire freshman class and to the sophomore class to a lesser extent. Was Trott and Phil Booth and Eric Pascal out there 40 minutes and eating up a night, you know, eating up all those minutes away from Javon Quinterly and Cole Swider and Brandon Slater? Was it really worth a hindrance in their development? Now, I understand Sadiq Bey developed greatly throughout the year. He was great from the start. I loved his game. But those other three, they had a hard time getting on the floor. I know Swider got hurt as well, but they had a hard time getting on the floor. And we all know the whole JQ story. Swider had the injury, and then Slater kind of had the back and forth with maybe he'll redshirt, maybe he won't. Also, the sophomore class. Gillespie, I thought he improved a little bit, and Jermaine Samuels improved significantly. DCR, however, he didn't really do much after that Florida tournament. I was a very big proponent of his early in the year, but towards the second half of the year, and especially in the Big East tournament and in the NCAA tournament, I really didn't like his game all that much. So was it worth, you know, giving these minutes to Cremo, to Booth, Pascal, and to Gillespie to a lesser extent? Was it worth giving all those minutes in games that you ended up losing, like Furman and Penn, and only winning one game in the NCAA tournament? Was it worth all that to just hinder the development of the freshman class? That's my negative spin. My positive spin: Jermaine Samuels and Sadiq Bey look like freaking players. They are fantastic. Jermaine Samuels proved it in the Big East tournament, proved it in the NCAA tournament. I thought Sadiq Bey had a solid game against St. Mary's. I thought he had a solid Big East tournament. I look for big things from him throughout the years here. Like I said, Gillespie improved a bit. Colin Gillespie will be good for the rest of his time in Villanova, that's for sure. So that's my positive spin on it. I like the development of those certain players. I like the way Phil Booth and Eric Pascal kind of bailed this team out and kind of pushed themselves into the Villanova folklore with the stuff they did this year.
Well, if we're being perfectly honest, I think I look at this year as a success, as an overall success. I think things like development and things like that, I guess we're just going to have to wait and see. I do agree, maybe the younger guys should have been played more. And, we talked about minutes distribution up and down throughout the season. But overall, looking at this year, I like what happened. I like what I saw. I like how it went down. Phil Booth and Eric Pascal just really carried this team to another level at times. And they really stepped up as seniors and they really stepped up as leaders with their play. They both had their highlight games this year. They both had their highlight takeover moments. They both became more of captains and leaders and mentoring the younger guys. Hopefully that they can pass the winning tradition onto the next generation. Because as you said, there is no more 2016 connections after this year. So we'll see how it goes. But if you look at this, 26-10, another Big East regular season championship, another Big East tournament championship, the first ever three-peat in the history of the Big East. They were able to do that. And they also helped lead Nova to its best start in conference play by opening up Big East play on that crazy winning streak. They did things that the people before them could not do. And then also just the accolades as a whole, finishing as a sixth seed in the NCAA tournament, the trophies that they won this year, the titles that they won. Honestly, this was a great year. This was definitely a fun year. There were ups and downs, and there were some ugly moments, but I thought overall there were definitely way more good than the bad.
Oh yeah, don't get me wrong. I still believe this year is a success, especially compared to our expectations at the beginning of the year. We were very skeptical. At least I was. You kind of were as well. Maybe not so much as myself. But considering that they won the Big East outright, they won the third consecutive Big East tournament title, and say what you will about the Big East this year and their tournament performance, which was pretty bad, but and it being a quote-unquote down year, they still won it. They still won it, the regular season title outright, and they won the Big East tournament title. And like I said, that puts them in the Villanova folklore. The things these two guys did in Booth and Pascal will be hard to match for any incoming freshman class or for any current class right now. It's going to be awfully tough to match what they did. And to see them do what they did this year was just absolutely outstanding. And it was an absolute treat to watch as a fan. So don't get me wrong. I know I mentioned that negative spin, but overall, it was a positive. I'm just sad to see these guys go the way they did. And I just really hope that in the future, this season was worth it.
So next year, after Booth, after Pascal, after the seniors, we will welcome a new class. And we know how highly touted that is with 2 5-star guys like Jeremiah Robinson Earl and Brian Antoine, both headlining that class. But the rest of the guys are no slouches either. When you put all that, when you take all the new pieces that are coming in and input it with what's going to be back next year, what are you looking forward to next year? What are some things that very early on, just 1 week after the season was over and before many months of training and development and practices and workouts, what are you looking forward to for next season?
As I mentioned before, I'm looking forward to the continued development of Jermaine Samuels and Sadiq Bey. I really think these guys can be top-notch players in the country if they keep this up. Jermaine maybe fine-tunes his shot a bit. Maybe even Sadiq Bey fine-tunes his shot a bit. They're going to be really damn good. I am so excited to see them next year. And hopefully, these freshmen come in and they're able to play. I mean, I don't know how Jay's going to treat next year without these senior guys here? Is he going to cater more to the freshmen and the sophomores? Is he going to let these guys experiment with these guys a bit, maybe throw them out there in situations we usually wouldn't see them in? I'm excited to see what Jay will do with that. Now, obviously, things of the past don't exactly suggest that, but right now he doesn't have that crutch in Phil Booth and Eric Pascal to fall back on. So I'm excited to see the freshman class come in. I hope to God Javon Quinterly stays. I know that's going to be a topic of discussion all off season. I hope he stays and gets to develop in this program. And I want to see how the freshmen now soon to be sophomores develop as well. I want to see if Swider can continue and build upon his intergalactic range. I want to see if Slater can be the defensive stalwart he's supposed to be built up as. I want to see these guys play next year, and that's what I'm excited about. And you know, maybe we won't have the same record as we did this year. It might be better, it might be worse, we don't know, but I'm excited to see those guys go out there and actually play when we really didn't get a chance this year.
I'm definitely looking forward. I'm in the same boat with you, and that I'm definitely looking forward to the continued growth of guys like Samuels, guys like Bay, guys like Colin Gillespie. I thought all three of those guys took big leaps, and then in Sadiq Bey's case, just coming out with a strong first impression, and then being a baller, and then being a big-time contributor in the Big East tournament, especially in that championship game as a freshman, really, really helps get you excited, and really helps get you ready for, like, wow, what can come down the line. And then, of course, you know, all the newcomers coming in. I can't wait to see Brian Antoine. I can't wait to see JRE. Guys like Eric Dixon, Justin Moore. We didn't really get to see the freshmen this year, but I hope that they put in the work to get some minutes next year. I would love to see JQ play. I would love to see Swider play. So later, we're just going to have to wait and see, honestly. I think also with a new assistant coach staff, some guys were rookies there too, and they definitely had some growing pains, some learning pains. Let's see how they take a step back and respond from their first year, what positives they can take away from it, what they can change moving forward, what can be different. And I think over the next couple of years, I mean, you know, next year is going to be solid, but you know, in a couple of years, 3 years later from now, I think this team is going to be stacked, really stacked. So there's definitely a lot to look forward to moving on, for sure. So we're coming down the tail end, the home stretch of our show, of our episode, of the season finale. And we got to give a nice little shout out, a nice little send off to the seniors on this roster right now. You have Eric Pascal, Phil Booth, Tim Delaney, Joe Cremo, Peyton Heck, Tim Saunders. Chris, let's hear your send off for each of these guys. You can take the stage first.
Sure thing. So Tim Saunders, proud of you for being part of the bench mob. Did a great job cheering on the team. You obviously provided a lot of work at practice. It seemed like teammates loved you. Great job being part of this Villanova basketball program. Joe Cremo, I know things probably didn't work out the way you wanted it to. The whole grad transfer thing with the whole new system, I guess it just didn't work out. You did hit some big shots against St. John's in that one game. You did start off pretty hot in the beginning of the season, kind of cooled down after that. And I know the shots weren't falling for you, but you fought through it. You did some little things well. You made some nice key passes. I thought there were some nice passes, especially in the Big East tournament. I thought you did a great job taking some charges, especially towards the end of the year when the shots weren't falling. You worked on other assets of your game and fine-tuned it, and I thought you did pretty well. But I understand all of us could probably say it probably just didn't work out for the best. It happens. I hope you go and do some great things. Tim Delaney, proud of you for fighting through the injuries. Every time you were out there on the court, we always rooted for you. You hit some key baskets at the end of the games and some blowouts, and it was really exciting to see you score and just to get some minutes out there, because we all know how hard you worked to just get back from that injury. Hopefully you're able to go on and do some great things. And Phil Booth and Eric Pascal, what else can we really say? You guys took this team and led them to another Big East title. You took this team with low expectations and brought them to a sixth seed and won a game in the NCAA tournament. You guys proved what it was like to be a Villanova basketball player. And I know that's such a cliche, and we always kind of joke about that whole thing with attitude and Villanova basketball and Villanova culture. You two both personified it in each way. The way you played, the way you conducted yourselves on and off the court. It was just a pleasure to watch you guys for 4 to 5 years. And it was just awesome to see you guys contribute in every facet of the game. We brought home 2 championships, something that this fan base has been craving for since 85. You were part of one of the best basketball teams ever assembled in 2018. You had some of the most memorable runs in 2016 with Phil Booth's contribution in the title game. You had Eric Pascal's contribution in against Kansas in the Final Four. Just all around great performances in every NCAA tournament that they played in. Never forget them. You were our last connection to school, and it was just a great time watching you guys play. Thank you for everything. Thank you for establishing a culture. Thank you for establishing great play, putting yourselves out there, game in and game out, and always acting like professionals, even though you were in college. It was just a wonderful treat to see you guys play.
I'm going to start off with Peyton Heck and Tim Saunders. Shout out to the Bench Mob. Always about the Bench Mob. Always down for the Bench Mob. Ever since the ViewBenchMob.com days, always down for any Bench Mob members, new, old, alumni, incoming. Always down for the Bench Mob. And Peyton Heck had a great name. Peyton Heck, I mean, what a name. What a name. Big shout outs to those two for being in the Bench Mob. We always love the Bench Mob over here at State of the Nova Nation. And then with Joe Cremo, man, you know, it was like a love-hate relationship. But at the end of the day, you know, you saw a guy that came in here and bought in right away from day one. And that's all you could ask for in a grad transfer. He had 1 year to pick everything up. Sure, a lot of people gave him flack. We gave him flack. But at the end of the day, we were rooting for him. He had those big shots, like you said, against St. John's. Sniper would have loved for him to have that Cremo moment. I think that would have been so awesome to see. But unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. But I think at the end of the day, you know, he found a place that he ended up loving. He loves Villanova. Just from talking to him, you could tell that he really enjoyed his time on the main line. And honestly, as someone who had 1 year left, he could have taken it any other way. He could have gone anywhere else. But he picked Nova, bought into the culture, bought into the family, brought into the program right away. And it was just awesome to see him, you know, take charges, give it his all on the floor. And he just had the right attitude when it came to approaching the court and just approaching the team and approaching his teammates. He seemed to really love being around the family, being in the program. And that was just so great to see. Now for Phil Booth, man, this goes way back. It's kind of hard to believe that this is like his last game. I think might have to check the stats, but I think him and Pascal have set the record now for most games played as a Villanova player. I think Brendan said that in his Arisen, but I'll have to check that one again. But man, Phil Booth, a lot of people are quick to go to the 20 points national championship game performance against UNC, and that's definitely rightfully known. You know, even though that Jenkins had the dreamlike shot with 4.7 seconds, without Phil Booth's 20 points, we wouldn't have been in that position. But overall, you know, I think something that gets lost in that narrative is what he went through to get to that point, battling through mono, battling through a nagging knee injury that spilled into the year after that, and that set him back a whole season. And then coming back, working hard to get healthy, and then last year, making his mark in 2018 upon being healthy again. That was just great. You know, he provided the highlight plays, the big shots, the big confidence takes, the big confidence makes, played some great D, had some great Booth faces, and just overall, you know, a funny guy, great leader, and he definitely made his mark. You know, he's going to be a legend. He's definitely going to be up there with one of the best that this program's ever seen. 2016, 2018, he made his mark on both, and that was just awesome. Very awesome for him. Very happy for him. Sad it wasn't the way he wanted to go out, but just overall, what a career for Phil Booth. Definitely one of the greatest. And just all the adversity that he overcame and, you know, playing through pain, playing through sickness, and still performing at a high level or performing on the biggest stages. Wow. Not, you know, that speaks for itself. You could add all the superlatives on that. And then Eric Pascal, man, for me and him, it goes back before Nova, you know, just with him being in the same town as me. You know, we came from a small town, but it was a football town. It was not a basketball town. And seeing him put the Dobbs Ferry basketball program on the map, just with the way that he played, just so electric. And you knew that he was going to have a bright future. Obviously, we're a couple of years older than him. So I remember sitting in Falvey, supposed to be studying for midterms, but I had to tune into the stream for our playoff game as they were trying to go win the gold ball, and just seeing him drop like 40 in a playoff game and thinking, this guy needs to come to Nova. That's exactly what I was thinking. I remember telling my friends freshman year, like, yo, we need to get this guy over here. He went to Fordham first, but eventually found his way over. And then once he made his way over, he played his parts on the scout team in 2016. And then once he was able to make his own mark, once he was able to play, once he was able to participate, he definitely had his fingerprints all over. He also, like Booth, had his own legendary moment in 2018 in the Final Four game against Kansas. And that's something that I won't forget. Love him because he's from my town. And, you know, when you come from a small town, everyone roots for anyone that comes out of there and gets out of there and goes on to do it big. But then it's double when he also goes to your school and kills it and reps your team, reps your alma mater. And I think the career he had, he definitely left it out all there. It was heartbreaking to sit there in that post-game press conference when he was crying on the podium. I was sitting there like, oof, ooh, that one hit a little hard. That one hit pretty hard. That one hit pretty hard. I was like, oh, Eric, I can't see you like this. This is tough. But overall, man, what a great career for him. What a great career for Booth. Two legends. They each had their highlight moments, their highlight stats, their highlight games. Helped bring Nova to two championships. And then Tim Delaney also, you know, he should not be slept on. This is a guy that should not be slept on. I finally got to talk to him over the weekend and finally met him. And he's just such a stand-up guy for a guy that had anything and everything go wrong with him health-wise. And that's something, you know, I can relate to over the last couple of years, just with all these injuries I've been suffering. But this guy comes in freshman year, gets two hip surgeries right and left, and then gets another hip surgery 2 years later. All those meant season-ending surgeries for him. So he's been sitting out. And who knows what his career could have been like. And I asked him, you know, Tim, you know, if you ever had a chance to start over, or, you know, if this never happened, or, you know, maybe after you recovered, you transferred elsewhere to get a fresh start. Like, you look at a guy like Kevin Ware with Louisville, won the national championship, had that scary leg injury, came back, and then he transferred elsewhere for a fresh start. And for Tim, it was just a no-brainer. He was not about it. He was like, oh, never. I would never trade this opportunity for the world. Everything that has happened to me has happened for a reason. And I just love this program. I love this family. Just hearing him talk about how much he loved being at Nova was very respectable. I mean, this guy's loyalty. And that's something that we can all get behind. Just the way that he's been able to stick it out, gut it out. His career didn't go the way he planned, but you know, he's still very important to this team. The guys seem to look up to him and respect him for that. And he's a grinder in practice, helps on scout team. He was Jordan Hunter, FYI, in the St. Mary's prep. And you saw how Nova did against him. They did a pretty good job of locking him down. So I'm going to be pretty sad to see him all go. Phil Booth, Eric Pascal, Tim Delaney, Joe Cremo, Tim Saunders, Peyton Heck. Thank you. Thank you for everything. And thank you for all your time and efforts with our beautiful basketball program. You guys will definitely be missed, for sure. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for listening to the State of the Nova Nation. This is kind of, wow, I'm getting a little sad myself, like, wow, this is the end of our season. Like, there's going to be no episodes. Like, we're not going to be doing this on Thursday. Oh, man.
Yeah, this is it. This is, it sunk in after Villanova lost. I was like, wait a minute. No more podcasts anymore. At least for this year. We'll be back next year.
Yeah, and we'll be back if there's any breaking news over the summer. So definitely keep an eye out for any emergency State of the Nova Nation or breaking news from State of the Nova Nation. But we really appreciate everyone who supported us and listened to us. You know, we see it every week in the rankings. We see it in the feedback that we've gotten, and we really, really thank you, and we're really, really humbled. You know, we hope that you guys have definitely enjoyed this as much as we have so much fun putting this together twice a week, sometimes once a week when I'm slacking. Thank you so much for your support to all the Nova Nationers around the world, because we hit a bunch of different countries. You know, we just continue to grow each year, and we wouldn't be able to do that without your support. We're thankful for everything. Stay tuned for any breaking news or emergency State of the Nova Nations. We'll definitely talk about them on Twitter. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the State of the Nova Nation by following VU Hoops on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher. You'll be able to get those new episodes in case they come out over the summer. And then you'll be more than ready for when the next season rolls around this fall. Check back at VU Hoops Daily. We're studying the Nova Nation may stop now, but we're not going to stop on VU Hoops. We got a lot of end of the season, end of the year content that we're going to pump out over the next coming weeks, almost every day. Check that stuff out. Check back at it. And we'll also have any recruiting updates over the summer, because that's when, you know, that's when it heats up. Please follow VU Hoops on social media. You can do so at VU Hoops, and that's good for Twitter and Instagram. Please follow the pod at SONN Pod on Twitter. And you can follow me, Eugene Rapay, at ERapay5.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if I'll be back from my Twitter hiatus or not, but in the case I am, follow me, Chris Stanzial, at the Stansman on Twitter. Also follow the pod, follow Eugene, follow VU Hoops.
Nova Nation, thank you again. Keep it real. We'll be back next year. Go Cats.